Hey guys, this is And the Writer Is, and I'm your host, Ross Golan. I've written with hundreds of writers and artists over the years, and my favorite part of each session is the first hour when we catch up about life and the industry, politics, composition, whatever. If you ask me, songwriters are some of the most worldly and intelligent people I've ever come across. So this is a journey of learning why people write songs, how people write songs, and most importantly, who the people are who write the songs. Now, I'm co-producing this with my friend Joe London, who was nominated for a Grammy earlier this year for Best Country Song. He makes us sound like angels. If you want to listen to the songs we discuss in this podcast, go to Spotify and look up our playlist, And the Writer Is, or go to our website, www.andthewriteris.com. Oh, and if you enjoy this podcast, please rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. We really appreciate that effort.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, before we get into the episode, there's something I wanted to say. This past Tuesday, I won BMI Pop Songwriter of the Year. I'm the co-winner with Justin Tranter because we tied for the most awards of the night. We don't really get a chance to give an acceptance speech, so I guess this is my opportunity. Last year, I didn't win a BMI Pop Award. And the year before that, I didn't win a BMI Pop Award either. So this goes out to all of you who didn't win a Pop Award this year, but will eventually be Songwriter of the Year. Now on to this episode. Speaking of BMI Songwriters of the Year, Noel Zancanella. He won it once. He happens to do a lot of stuff with Ryan Tedder, so I know a lot of you guessed that that would be our guest on our social media, on our Instagram, Twitter, etc. And that's what I love so much about this podcast, is that it's introducing you to the people who are really behind the song. You may not even know who Noel is, but Noel's sitting there writing and producing all these records with Ryan. He's even doing some on his own. He's kind of the hidden member of One Republic, if you will. We did this episode a little bit ago at the Village Recorder, which is a classic studio. You should look it up because incredible records have been done there. We talk about Ryan Tedder from the beginning because obviously that's who his publishing is through and who his main co-writer is. We talk about Brent Cutzel, who is the cellist and bassist of One Republic. And we talk about DJ Frankie, who's a great producer out of Colorado as well. So without further ado, here is this week's episode of And the Writer Is. Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. Today's writer-producer has won Grammys. He has collaborated on more than a handful of number ones, and he's been crowned BMI Songwriter of the Year. In addition to that, he's kind of an invisible member of one of the biggest bands in the world. Even with all those accolades, he's perhaps the most modest writer we've ever interviewed. And the writer is one of my first co-writers from way back, Noel Zancanella.
Hey.
How about that?
It's amazing. That intro was amazing.
Thanks, man. This room is amazing. So you we're in Danny Elfman's old room. Is that what this is?
Yeah, it's Studio E for Elfman. But
do you feel that energy? I mean, I know you're into that. Like, do you think you feel the energy of the previous people who've worked in this classic building?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. And they do a lot here. You know, the Village does a lot to keep all of that alive too, and keep the memory, you know,
yeah,
and the history of this building intact. The room's excellent, man. Like we were discussing, I'm the least famous person to ever occupy this space, man. At one point in time, I think this even was the headquarters for oh shit, what was the name of that synth? Like super off.
Moog
Fair, Fairlight.
Oh wow, nice.
This was their headquarters.
Like, yeah. Do people ever ask you what kind of equipment you use, like, online? Because when people ask me that, I'm usually like, I don't know if I use equipment. I use my iPhone. I mean, I know it's different because I'm not a producer. But do people constantly ask
it's
you?
It's all in the box questions these days, though. Yeah. You know, it's like what literally like what? Yeah, exactly. What plugins or even what like auto tune settings? Like, you know? No. That's not true. Somebody hit me up maybe a few weeks ago, and they really wanted to know how I recorded Ella Henderson's Ghost. How Ella was recorded.
How did you?
I think we used like a 67 or a 47. It was it's a snafu because we did it in London like super quick. I don't really remember. But
she's incredible.
Yeah, she's rad, man.
So I was looking back at our old emails, and we've been friends for like 7 or 8 years now.
Yeah, man.
Which is amazing because at the time we were working in, you know, Oren Yoel's old place. And which was underneath what are now train tracks,
right?
You know,
right.
And it's amazing to see what's happened in your last 7 or 8 years. How did that happen? Where have you been?
I mean,
like, how did it go from when we first started writing together? We were, I don't think you had any cuts at that point, right?
Maybe not. Maybe you know? Not. Yeah.
I don't think I did either. But I mean,
no, that would have been 2010, I think. Dude,
sure.
I think was 2010 when we were hanging out and we were doing like the key. Yeah. Remember we wrote with what's his name?
Keith
Harrison. Is that his name? What's Keith's last name? No, Black Eyed Peas guy?
Oh yeah, Keith Harris.
Hey, Keith Harris, that's right. Yes, we wrote. Remember we did a date with him, which was super fun.
We've done a bunch of random sessions.
Yeah, man.
So I went back and saw like how even you, me, and Brent, and you know,
we did.
We kind of did a few sessions, but like,
well, so what happened was I signed with Ryan because of Good Life, because I co-wrote that with the band. And then they went on tour immediately. This was like 2009, like maybe the end of 2009.
Oh, so you wrote
which all kind of fits into you, right? So then I wrote Good Life with them, signed a songwriter's deal
in Colorado.
In Colorado,
okay.
And then they bounced literally the second we got the record done, they bounced on like a 15-16 month tour, and so I came here and kind of started getting into the mix and stuff.
You didn't know at the time that Good Life was going to be that big.
It was, no, because it was the third single, and it took 2 years almost after the record came out, a year and a half or something, to even become a single. And then even when it became a single, it like crawled. It's kind of the classic One Republic slow burn thing.
There's probably not another band in the last 5 years that sort of automatically would just sort of that album. I mean, I think you guys had 3 number one songs. That's certainly a hot AC and whatnot. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Yep. They just lasted forever. I mean, Counting Stars is like just sat there for
That one was
years.
A trip.
It felt like
probably
literally,
absolutely. So you and I were doing our thing, and then I spent most of that year I think here, kind of just in the writer gauntlet.
Yeah,
you know.
Go back a second. So where in Colorado are you from again?
Denver.
So you're from Denver, but how did you meet Ryan? I mean, I know obviously he's from Colorado Springs, right?
Well, so he's from Tulsa, Oklahoma, but his dad lives in Colorado Springs.
Right.
And so I think he came to live with his dad for maybe a year or two.
Uh-huh.
In high school.
Sure.
And that's where he met kind of some of the founding members of One Republic.
Okay.
And then he convinced them all to move, I think in 2003 or something like that, to LA to try to kind of start a career as a band. Sure. And so everybody moved out here. And but so his wife, Ryan's wife, is from Denver.
Right. Okay.
And so there's the connection there. So when Apologize blew up and they got massive, I think the wife literally was like, Genevieve was just like, look, you know, if you're going to have a career as like a fucking rock star, then you should probably, you know, maybe I should live in Denver and be close to my family if we're going to have babies and stuff.
Right.
So
if you're going to be traveling the world, then let me stay home.
Well, and that's what happened. I think Apologize blew up.
Yeah.
And he was instantly forced into like 15 to 18 months of touring.
Dude,
only he had no money at that time, right? So he couldn't even come back to see her. So he convinced her to move out here or however that worked, you know what I mean? Or they agreed to move out together or whatever. Right. And then he just kind of, you know, it wasn't his fault.
Sure.
But I think at that point she was just like, dude, you know. So I had met him here at the Village. I was an engineer. And I'd done a lot, you know what I mean? There was a period of time.
So you coincidentally moved down here It had nothing to do with them when you were at the when you were engineering.
I met Ryan literally in this building. Yeah.
Oh, so it's coincidence that you're from Colorado and he was living there.
100% coincidence.
I always thought you guys knew each other from home.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
I really didn't know anybody. I mean, you know, the other kind of like big guy from Denver is Frankie, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I didn't know Frankie either. Yeah. He's a lot younger than me, though. So
sure. Wait. So when you were in, you're working as an engineer here. Were you like a? I mean, you weren't really a runner. You obviously know what you're.
I started as a runner here.
Yeah.
Started as a runner.
Were there people that you
worked my way up?
Were there people you'd walk in and be like, man, I really want to get to know this guy, but I'm just going to take his food order and just do the run?
Dude, all the time, man. I mean, my first run was getting coffee for Suge Knight.
For Suge Knight?
Yeah. It was like, it was Twilight Zone because I was like this silly, petty Denver kid, you know?
Sure.
And I mean, even now, bro, there's a lot more popping in Denver musically or has been with Lumineers, et cetera, you know, over the last decade than there was when I lived there. You know, 2004 and earlier. So it was like, it was just nothing going on. When I moved to LA, it was a huge eye opener, right?
So Suge Knight goes and turns
to
you and
says,
"I
start working
at
this place." Oh man, I don't even want to tell that story.
Well, you kind of have to. I guarantee he's not listening to this podcast from his prison cell.
Okay, so it has. So I can't exactly, you know, this is all. You know, I'm going to paraphrase and I don't remember. You know, this is all just off memory, but it happens something like this. I pull up the guy that owns the villages he runs a tight ship, Jeff.
Yeah.
And I love him, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's part of the reason why I'm here now is because they're so excellent to their clients. Not always the greatest guy to work for just because he's a ball buster.
Yeah.
And I had my little Honda Civic, you know what I mean? And I rolled up and the first thing Jeff said to me was just like, "Don't fuck this up," you know, or one of those. And so Suge wanted it was like a tall cappuccino from Starbucks with 8 Splendas in it. Eight Splendas. So I raced to Starbucks. You know, it was my first thing. You know, and I throw the Splendas in the coffee, and I didn't stir it. So I came back, man, and I remember pulling in, and like Suge was. It was like 9 a.m, okay, and he had been, you know, all night bender. You know, and he's standing in the parking lot, like, on the phone. And I pull up, and Jeff's standing there, and he's like, you better not fuck this up or something like that, man. And I hand Jeff the coffee, and he gives it to Suge. Suge takes a sip, and he's like, "There's no Splenda in here." Because I guess he probably tasted the foam on the top, right?
Yeah.
So I'll never forget, Jeff was just like, "Go put fucking 8 Splenda in there." And I'm like, "I did." He's like, "Go put another 8. So I went and put, like, 8 more Splenda in this fucking cappuccino, man. And he just pounded it, and he was like, "This is great."
Were you sitting
in front of us, man? I was like, "Oh my god!" I mean, half of that cup was sugar.
So that's your first day here?
It was my first run. Yeah, I mean, in a studio like this, it's literally like Wayne's World, right? Because they're booking whoever every single. So I mean, you never know who you're gonna.
Yeah, run I mean,
like, Ringo Starr. Yeah. I ran into Ringo Starr in the hall here or something like that. Like one of the first, you know, week or two I worked here.
Do you say hi?
It depends, right? They've got a big. Thing about that here, which I get, man, because you know, left unchecked, there's a lot of cats that would just like slip the script under the
oh yeah. Well, there was a guy, a runner at another studio that I know of, who was in this, like, his idol was in the room with us, and he's like, I'm not supposed to do this, but can I take a picture? And he did, and then I know that he got fired like the next day. Yeah. And I was like, "Oh man, you're just
And taken out of context, I get. Like, you know, it's...
Yeah, I know.
They should
be
able
to
do it,
like,
but if you multiply it by all of the new kids, that it's just a free-for-all. And you know how it is, man. When you've got a lot going on, like you and Cash or whatever, you're working on stuff, last thing you want is, like, people in your room fucking...
Right.
Oh, you wrote that song. You know, you're like, dude, just
there's
know
a great,
your place.
There's a great sort of a quote sort of thing where someone was talking about Sting and was asking him about one of his big records. They asked, like... You know, tell me about writing that song. He's like, dude, I wrote that song in, you know, essentially in one day. You know?
Yeah.
All you guys have lived with this for 10 years, 20 years, but all the answers that I've had about this song are the same for 20 years.
Wow.
You know, it's really strange. You can tell the story, but I can see why after a certain time, you know, how many times can you answer how you wrote a song that really probably took you... I don't know. I mean, we can name a number of records that were hits that were written very quickly. Not, and a lot of them are take a long time, but even it, how long does it really take for it to be a good story? I don't know, you wrote a song, and then it's so mysterious when other people kind of don't have that.
Yeah.
But when you're here and you're running and you're doing all the engineering stuff, how does it go from you meeting Ryan, and then why that day are you, is it, are you allowed to say like, hey?
I moved out to Los Angeles to definitely do writing and production.
Right. You
know, but it was like
tables. You were a DJ or something like that,
well,
right?
I had a college radio show, different type of DJ.
Okay. Right?
Boulder, like weird, super weird jazz, like any, like weird experience, like all this shit we sample for hip hop, basically.
Right.
You know, I had that show for 2 years or something like that, or maybe a year, but I used it as an excuse to buy as many records as I could possibly buy.
And CU would pay for it. Because it was your show. Yeah, and it was basically a college show.
Yeah, it was pretty
cool. Is that how you got your background, was just being a fan of music, or your parents were?
My dad was a jazz trumpet player, man.
So did you play trumpet?
No. I grew up playing bass. My first instrument was bass. Bass and guitar, right? Hand in hand, kind of.
Sure. Do you still actually play a lot, or are you mostly doing stuff?
I play enough to write. So like a lot of us, right? Yeah, because programming and stuff was always my forte.
Sure.
I got really into once I got kind of a drum machine, MPC type thing.
Like, sure.
I'm old though, man. You know,
I probably shouldn't. Date you and ask how you were.
These kids are like, now they're like 15 stuff. And you have like Logic just for free, or you know what I mean?
Sure.
This whole thing. I mean, back in the day, you actually had to have Pro Tools, and like, you know, you had to go to a studio that had Pro Tools because it's like a $40,000 rig.
Right.
You know, so yeah, man, everything was done on.
So you go, you tell me again, so you meet Ryan.
Okay, so what happened was I was doing a lot of
engineering. I guess I should start with Ryan, right?
Well,
I mean, like, that makes sense.
So the first time I met Ryan actually was we were working on, like, I don't, this cat named Dima Bilan, I think.
Okay.
He's like the, at the time anyway, he was like this kind of Russian Justin Timberlake.
Ah, yes, naturally.
And so they had... So they had hired Timbaland, like, right at his peak, too, you know? This is coming off of the Future Sex Love Sounds record. Hired him to do two songs.
Ryan had just signed
to Timbaland. This pre-apologized, right? Yeah,
right.
He had signed to Timbaland and was a writer. Tim had him move out here, I think.
Okay.
Or whatever, you know what I mean? When Ryan moved to L.A.,
Right after Columbia, before he signed to Mosley, right?
There you go. And he signed to Lance Bass or something like that for a year because he won that...
Right.
You know, Tedder won some, like... It was, yeah, right? It was like
MTV,
a pre,
like,
MTV pre-American Idol kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's the project that I met Ryan on, I think, man. He was working on a couple songs. We were kind of forced to interface.
Right.
Because we had to work on these songs and this whole thing. And then I just ended up – and then obviously Ryan came back through a lot for a little while there while Timbaland was coming through. And then I didn't see him for a long time, man. Went off on my own, did my own thing, quit working here.
Okay.
Ultimately, I didn't want to be an engineer. It was just how I was paying bills. But and a great place to meet people and a great skill set to have. However, when you work for a studio like this, as anybody that works here can attest, like, you're married to it, bro.
Right.
You know, there's 60-hour weeks. So it's just like I literally couldn't do anything else but just be an engineer. I didn't want to do that. So I quit, got back into writing and production. And
were you living in Santa Monica at the time? Were
Venice.
You living?
I've always lived in Venice.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then I, yeah, man, I mean, I was pitching shit to James Chaney at UMG when he used to work there. And I was trying to, like, figure
That's
it out.
That's how I met you, was through James.
There you go.
Because James hit up.
Because that was like our orange
James
connection.
Okay. Because he hit up Brett Stare, who is the same guy who connected me to Ryan, and then Brett was my booking agent. He was, you know, he was like, you should write with Noel. So that's how that happened. I don't think I had a publishing deal at the time, so I think it was like pre all that.
Wow, man.
Yeah, like, yeah. But anyway, so you go and you guys are working on the Russian Justin Timberlake.
So we worked on that stuff, and then, you know, I would see Ryan here and there. How it really happened, though, was years later, I think in like 09, 08, 08, I met this girl in Denver, man, and I fell in love with her, and I started chasing her. And so I started looking for every reason I could to go back. And so what happened is I have a buddy that lives in Denver who owns one of the nicest recording studios in the city. And he, Ryan, was coming through with a bunch of other people. As a matter of fact, I know the session, man. He was coming in with Wayne Wilkins, Louis Bianconella. Isn't that his last name?
I don't know.
I always forget Louis's last name. I don't know him very well. Sam Waters.
Right, of course.
And Ryan. And they wrote Jordan Sparks' Battle... What was it? Battlefield?
Yeah.
Is that what the song was called? Right. Yeah, okay, so here's the deal.
It was like a Love is a Battlefield for 2000 and...
Oh, like that was like right around Halo and all that stuff. Sure. Yeah, so what had happened was my buddy had booked the session. Ryan was moving... He'd moved back to Denver and wanted to book the session at this thing. So my buddy called me and he was like, dude, I do not... He's like, I know you're not an engineer anymore, but... I don't have anybody like. Yeah. He was super. He wanted.
You don't have anybody big enough at that point.
He's like, I don't have a high enough caliber. Yeah. Exactly. It's Denver. He's like, will you do it? Will you pinch hit for me?
Sure.
And I was like, oh fuck, it's Ryan. Okay, what? Sure. You know what I mean? And so I did it. So
did he know you from here?
Yeah.
So it was like he walked in and was like, what are you doing here?
Exactly.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah. And so we did that one day, or it was like 2 days or something like that. And then I didn't see him again, you know what I mean, for like maybe another month and a half. And I can't, to be honest with you, man, I can't remember exactly how it went down, but I literally ran into him and Evan Bogart at a coffee shop in Denver because I was still there chasing this chick, you know, like coming back and forth. So I ran into Ryan again, and he's like, dude, you know, this is post that's the Wayne Wilkins stuff, yeah, the Battlefield session. And he goes, he was like, I have an overlap. Like, you know, he's like, my band is recording an album. I think it was Waking Up. Must have been. No, yeah. Yes, it was Waking Up. They were recording it in this big old house in this neighborhood of Denver called Park Hill, which is really beautiful. And he's like, I've got a, you know, we turned this entire house into a studio. We're doing a record there. We're like almost finished with it. He's like, but I have this 1 week thing coming up in like 3 weeks where I don't have an engineer. And he's like, can you please just come by, you know what I mean? And like help us plug things in and help us record a few things and this and that. And, you know, whatever. And I was like, sure. You know, again, it was another excuse to kind of be near this chick. So I went to the house, man, and worked with the guys for
amazing how much a girl can have to do with like your whole career.
Yeah. No, I'm dead serious, man. It's all you could think of was this girl. And because I really didn't want to engineer, you know, it's a rough gig, man.
Right.
It's a rough gig. Yeah. And, yeah, so it just happened, bro.
Pretty thankless.
It just happened. I got in there and I had the skill set that those guys kind of, they needed someone like me, man, because I could, you know, I can also, a lot of engineers these days, they can't get sounds. They don't know how to use mics and stuff. They do, they can set up a mic for a vocal, for a pop vocal, but a fucking, you know, C800 into a 1073, into a CL1B, you know what I mean? Right. And then that's all they maybe get, you know. And so, like, right off the bat with One Republic, I was recording cellos. And, like, it was like, oh, let's do this, you know what I mean? And I made it happen, and I guess they liked me, so I just stuck in with them.
But how did you move from being an engine? Well, first of all, how did you move from being an engineer?
So I started with Ryan, you know. At that point, I was pretty blatant about the fact that I was like, look, dude, I'm not an engineer. You know what I mean? Anymore. Yeah. Like I'm doing this. Like, I was just kind of like, I also do this other thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the song, but there was something that I was like, you know, Ryan was working on, and I was like, you know, I could probably, you know, fix the drums on that and make it a little more pop. And yeah, it may have been a Natasha Bedingfield thing. I don't remember what was going on at that. It was, this was like 2009, but it was something like that. And I did, and he liked it. So I started doing like more and more production for the things that he was working on, you know, and he's trying to finish a record while simultaneously still being Ryan Tedder and like working on 9 pop songs. You know? And I think I started to get a really good relationship happening with Brent at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the other chief songwriter in the band. All I remember, dude, was Ryan was going away on a ski trip or something like that for the weekend. And Brent and I were, you know, the rest of us were all staying in that house or, you know what I mean, working. Yeah. And Ryan was like, you know, it was the end of the record. Everything had already been written. And he was like, let's try to beat whatever. Whatever we thought the biggest song was at the time, which may have been Secrets or whatever it was. And, you know, so Brent and I screwed around, did like 5 starts, and when Ryan came back on Monday, one of the starts was Good Life.
Yeah.
And so he heard it and just like instantly wrote to it. Dude, within like 7-6 hours, we had that song fully fleshed out. last song written for the record, I think. Coincidentally the biggest.
Were you ever asked to be a member of the band, or did you ever want to be? Is it weird to be such? So
there was like one brief period right around then when they didn't have a bass player or something. Well, Brent's
because he's a cellist, but
he didn't want to play bass, or I can't remember the situation.
It's a weird change. You're going from fourths to fifths on your strings. Like it actually takes. Like I'm always impressed when someone's like, "Oh, I'll pick up cello," and all of a sudden, like the mental game to switch from one to the other is always like more impressive than people realize. But you could have played bass with them, or was it like who cares?
There was a moment in time when it was like, you know, would you like to come on tour and possibly play bass? And I was like, hell no. Looking back on it, would I maybe have done it? I don't know. I've never been a performing musician, and that scared the hell out of me.
Sure.
You know. But that was about it, man. You know, my place with those guys was definitely – the thing is I was the vehicle. I could produce shit all day and all night in hotel rooms and stuff like that.
Right.
While Ryan was handling business.
Did you tour with them a lot?
A lot.
Yeah. So, like, while you're writing this stuff, you're on the road with the band.
Well, for
you really are the like I called you the invisible member because your contribution is. I mean, I guess I've known the guys since before they broke. You know, it's like the contribution you've had to the writing is obviously pretty significant. You know, and it's not like you're hidden or anything, but it's an interesting thing to be such a key member of a band and not be, you know, a stage member of the band.
Yeah.
Do people treat you because you're so close to the project? Do people treat you differently? And do you have like groupies? Like, do like one Republic people know?
Well,
do they know you?
At one point a while ago, maybe there were some because I had a Facebook account and we were all kind of tied in together. And you know, one Republic fans would find me and just ask a lot of random questions, and girls would, you know what I mean? Sure, but really, they're just trying to get to the band.
Right. How do you write for other people while you're on the road? Like, how do you write for other things other than One Republic? Or is it over the last 2 years of touring, is that, you know, the new album just came out, and you were saying how you spent essentially 23 months on it.
Yeah.
Were you able to work on other things, or?
This time around, not really. You know, we didn't do too much. It's just because of the nature of how this record went down. You know, it was just different. It was different than the last two that I'd done with them.
Was it fun?
It was fun, but it's, you know, with bands, right? There's this huge component of that has everything to do with kind of like finding the next sound, right? I mean, I guess we all deal with that. But for a band, for those guys in specific, I feel like they had this really huge weight this time around.
Do you feel that weight?
Of course, because I'm kind of like, you know, well, at least on, you know, I'm like with this last record, I'm constantly like kind of pitching Ryan starts and you know, everybody was trying to kind of find their feet and figure out a sound that ultimately would work for the record, and it's wild, man. Because
it's so different that, you know, that the top line game is the relevancy comes in lyric writing, and melodies. I think math wise, the basic overarch is the same. I think that da-da-da-da-da-da that you get in like. The whole like Fetty meets Drake kind of thing that's all over pop right now. Like, right. I think eventually that's just a fad of this era melodically. But I think melody wise, songs tend to be, you know, the same since the 50s as far as that goes. And the hard part is in, you know, the production to stay relevant and in the lyrics to
lyric
stay
and production, huh?
Yeah. I mean, how do you stay relevant?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And for a band like this, you know, we're working on songs and you've got, I mean, you know, make no mistake, it's their show. I was just a hired gun, you know. Well, my job as a producer was just in my opinion anyways, just to help them achieve their vision and try to keep them on, you know, track.
It makes you a good co-writer, you know.
I mean, I'm not in the band. I don't have, you know, the dynamic is so wild because you've got band members that, you know, these poor guys have to go out and tour these songs for the next decade or, you know, or whatever, or at least the immediate, you know, future. And it's like they want to do songs that they believe in.
It's amazing to see how big they've gotten, you know, worldwide, yeah. you're talking about just a massive, massive yeah. band. From, yeah.
They were already you know, huge, but Counting Stars was like that. For me, that was when I saw them go from, you know,
sure.
they were doing, you know, 23 to 3,000 person shows in Europe and stuff like that. And I would go on tour with them. And then, you know, they went straight to, you know, pretty much arenas, right? Like bigger.
So crazy. Do you start from do you produce out finished songs now with them, or is it mostly that you start like do you start from tracks? Do you start from songs? Does it depend on this last album?
With those guys, yeah, it really depended, man. They you know, Ryan is in my opinion, man, Ryan's at his best when he's doing it, man, when he's just, you know, there's some certain magic that he has yeah. when he's at the keys.
Sure.
Or a guitar. When he's guiding the chords while he's coming up with top line, you know. So I tried to keep him, you know, at least with the stuff that I did with him on this record, like Let's Hurt Tonight and Choke. And
yeah.
I did a lot of the more kind of, you know, I don't know, rootsy songs.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff I wanted to do. That's the kind yeah. of stuff I wanted to bring out, you know.
Yeah.
And they were, and obviously you've heard the records, you know, they've got this whole other kind of component on the record that's like more... It's like a funk, kind of disco, syncopated thing going sure. on. I wanted both, man.
How soon till you have to start writing like the next one?
To be honest with you, man, you know, I don't even know. You know, I don't even know.
Because
really, I'm not. I was obviously, you know, I jumped in on this last record with him, and we went super hard. But oh well, I did the Shawn Mendes thing.
She
did last summer.
Yeah.
And I literally did that like at night.
Yeah.
Like after we were, you know, working on our shit.
Did you write that on your own? Who did you write that with?
I was brought in. That was a co-write with Camila.
Nice.
And Sean. And then there was another writer.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd come
to
me.
How does it feel when you get to write songs sort of away from, I mean, great writing teams are great writing teams for a reason. So, you know, we've done interviews with Mikkel. You know, we didn't do Tor and Mikkel. No, if there's a tour, we'll do Tor too sometime. But, like, you know, you just see Rodgers and Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart, Rodgers. Like,
yeah.
There are different writing teams and different things. It's like, what does it feel like when you work outside of the writing team? Is it sort of, is it exciting or does it make you kind of... Nervous?
No, I love it, man. And I've been doing it. I mean, I haven't written with Ryan in a long time. Him and I mean, we're doing a song with Ella Henderson.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got a couple other things that have kind of been, but we haven't written anything new in a while.
Sure.
And it just has a lot to do with the fact that we all just kind of split, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe when the record was almost done and everything was at mix, everybody kind of went their own ways and stuff. So, I mean, I've only been writing with other people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It depends. It's a tough thing, you know.
Yeah.
I like writing with Ryan because the one thing I like about that guy, man, and this is a very industry-centric kind of thing. Like, you have to be in it to know. But a lot of top-liners, dude, are like that. Like, it's that day of shit. You know, like for instance, if Ryan and I are working on a song,
yeah,
like, you know, we'll go back and rework the top line 20 times, sections, you know, 100%. Constantly, or the track, or what, you know, we'll go and go and go and go. I mean, like, fuck, man, that song, the Demi Lovato song that Ryan and I did years ago called Neon Lights.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, I worked on the production on that song for like 5 months on just making changes and stuff.
Sure.
And then it's like,
it's song craft versus songwriting.
Absolutely, man. And I come, you know, and then I do this thing in writing sessions and top liners, man, they come in, they want to do their little thing and bounce. And that's it. Just send me it when it sounds like a hit. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, what if a section needs to be rewritten? What if, like, you know what I mean? Like, there are like top liners that don't want to come back in the room again.
Right.
I'm not going to name any names, but I'm just like, literally, like, whatever they give you that day is what you're supposed to run with. And I'm just sitting there thinking, well, that's funny because I've worked with this dude, you know, who's a very legendary songwriter, and he's not too good to go back and fucking rewrite entire sections.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean? To exhaustion until we get the song right. How are you so hot shit that you can't do it? You know,
well, it's
so
the difference of your jazz. Like, you grew up around jazz, which is all improv. Like, the best jazz musicians are ones that improvise best.
Yeah,
you know.
True.
But the actual refrain, the actual chorus in jazz, that thing took forever to write. And then the solos happen, and that's just a moment. But solos in pop don't really happen, you know? And even those are really edited. Right. You know, it's like, I mean, no offense to Johan, but don't kid yourself that the guitar solo in Dangerous Woman is like a one take kind of thing, you know? Like, solos don't really happen that organically. Right. And it's so much of that, the crafting, the chorus takes all this time.
Yeah, it's just a different model, you know.
Like, what songs have you had that have worked that were just like
came super fast?
Yeah, like did Burn or did like So Good, you know, like some of these songs that sound like Burn is one of those things that sound like it could have been written in 5 minutes and probably took, you know, months to write.
Right. Well, I wasn't
Which
there.
Is what makes that great.
That record's amazing, man. And I wasn't there for the inception of that song. Okay. I was brought in later.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you know how I've always wondered this, so it's a random question, but when it's like burn, 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 and it's like Melodyne on that one Burn, right?
Mm-hmm.
That must have happened after she was gone, right? Or is that like where it's just like, oh, that would be cool.
That's on Tedder, man. That's on Tedder.
That like one. Something about that one note. I always am like, that's really cool because clearly that was done later and it's actually like in that genre is such a cool effect.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like it seems like it was planned, but it clearly was done afterwards, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, that was a Tedder move for sure. And I can't remember specifically why. I mean, that note was augmented. Obviously, it's worked.
Sure.
So with regard to, you know how it goes, man, and some of them come super quick, right? And sometimes the production you do day of is like just minimal enough or whatever, and it works and it's perfect. And then then everything you try to add down the road just whatever clouds the song, doesn't make it sound any better.
Sure.
So I mean, Counting Stars was the track portion of that song came super quick. It's very basic, but I think Ryan spent a lot of time rewriting lyrics on that thing and kind of going back and forth.
Do you think it makes a difference, or do you think sometimes like change? Because sometimes when someone's like, "Hey, trying to tweak lyrics in a verse," I think it's different when you're the artist. I think because you want to make sure you're saying something, but sometimes I think tweaking the lyrics in the second verse, like I don't know who's listening to that. Yeah. I don't know if I couldn't sing you lyrics to any of the songs that I've had that have been successful.
Yeah,
I couldn't sing any of the verses.
Right,
I probably couldn't even sing the chorus to a few of them.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, man. Yeah, so I mean, basically, like picking your battles.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think the editing process is. I'm not saying that you shouldn't go. You need to be proud of it in the end, but sometimes it's like I don't know if that really makes a difference. Like the Swedish sort of thought process when they don't speak the language first.
Right.
You know, it's about the sound of the words often more than the meaning. Yeah. So,
well, isn't it? And this might be total bullshit.
Yeah.
They can call bullshit on me. But like, like with Ryan's kind of songwriting, which is very lyric centric, right?
Yeah.
It's all about like a classic lyric, you know, and versus the Swedes. I feel like the Swedes they'll compromise lyric for sake of phonetics and how it fits.
Yeah, any day.
You know what I mean? Even if it was the most beautiful fucking line ever written. I don't know. But then on the other side, you know, a guy like Tedder will definitely compromise you know, a within reason, a melody or even, yeah, just a rhythm for a killer lyric.
Well,
yeah.
It's also if you're, you know, if you're writing for, I mean, you know, I guess for Ryan, a lot of those songs are really international, but it seems like that the Swedish thought process is that you're writing for half of your audience that doesn't speak English. So it doesn't really matter about what you're saying as much as how you're saying it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and there's so much truth to that. I mean, I guess within, right?
Like, well, you don't want it to be shit. It still has to be clever somewhere. Somewhere like the hook or the title, like it can't just be throwaway.
Right.
Well, if no one will ever cut it, and the artist won't want to cut it, and it's not real and it's not emotional. I'm just saying that there are probably times where that extra tweak, I don't know if it makes a difference.
Well, aren't we kind of coming down off of that now? Like, isn't everyone a little bit like the Swede thing was just like really took hold, you know, for a couple of years, and now even you know, everybody's kind of like letting things breathe a little bit, at least with some of the sessions maybe. I've been in recently, you know, everybody's like, I think at one point everybody's like, we have to do the math. We have to do the math because the Swedes are doing the math and it's working. We have to do the math as well. You know, it was kind of one of those. Now everybody's kind of like, okay, you know.
Interesting. I mean, I guess I think part of the math is knowing when to script the math, you know?
And knowing when to break the rules.
You know, and even saying that this, you know, right now you have the number one song at top 40 is by MXM, you know, it's by the Swedes. And, you know, even if that's the move to push back from the over math kind of single, those math songs still work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think it also depends if you're pitching a song versus, you know, when you're with the artist. I think it's easier to pitch sort of a classic math song.
Yeah, totally. You're totally right, man. Yeah.
So watching you go on stage and get your Grammy was pretty cool.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I mean, what's that?
Pretty wild.
Yeah, where do you keep your Grammy?
It's at my place, you know, just on a table. I don't do it, man. I try not to hang anything, really.
Why?
I'm superstitious, I guess.
Why? What's the superstition?
Accolades? I don't know, man.
I mean, that's what I was saying about the modesty thing.
I like to hide everything so that I feel like I've not done a fucking thing.
Because that motivates you?
Yeah. I just hate tooting my own horn, man.
Why?
I don't know, man. I just never cared.
Because it's
isn't
so
that weird. I've never given a shit.
When I was
9 years old, I got MVP or something like that for swimming. Like I was, you know what I mean? A competitive swimmer. I didn't even show up for the trophy. And like they were so bummed because it was like every other swimmer wanted that trophy so bad. And I just didn't even.
So do you actively push back from that?
I'm not too big of a fan of the BMI things and all of that either. Going to those, I love them and I love everybody. I'm just very self conscious and I hate going up there, and like, you know,
it's really interesting. Do your parents like did they give you so much love that you're like I don't need love from the outside, or do they not? You know, like where does it? It's so unique because I think you know we're talking about LA and how it can swallow you up. And I feel like the way it swallows people up is because they want to be famous. They want to be recognized. And it never is enough. Like
nothing's ever enough here, man. Nothing.
But it is enough if you're not, if you don't care about the accolades.
That's it, man. Well, we could pull out cliches all day, right? Like some people move to LA, man. The city changes them. Some people change the city, right?
Yeah.
Some people get here and they, you know, one of the funniest, I think LA is one of those cities where like 2 weeks after moving here, you now want a bunch of shit that you didn't even know existed before you got here.
Yeah.
I want to fuck it. You know what I mean? I want a black Wraith with 23-inch rims. You know, you didn't even know what a Rolls Royce Wraith was before you moved here, dude.
I didn't know what it was. You know, you just said it.
And that's not only that, LA likes winners.
I just looked it up.
LA loves winners, right? Yeah. Loves winners, does not like losers.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of external...
When someone moves, I'm always like, welcome to LA where the streets are paved with actors' dreams.
That's it. Don't let all the palm trees and frozen yogurt fool you. It's a tough place.
Do you want things at all? Like, what do you do now that you have, like, you have so many hits, like, do you live in a nice house? Or do you drive a nice car?
I mean, don't you think the best thing to do is just kind of hide, man, and stay humble and do your thing? The most important thing is to last, I think. That's all I think about, man. And you've been in this game. As long as I have. And it's like, and you've had a really killer year. And I had a really killer year, like last year or whatever, year before, 15, I think, right? Last year. And I mean, it's really just being able to deal with the ebbs and flows of the industry, man. That's all I care about.
When 2015 ends and you're winning BMI Songwriter of the Year, are you thinking, oh yeah, I'll be able to sustain this level of success next year too? Or like, how do you emotionally deal with when you're at the peak?
You know, it's an ego thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I'm so humble. I didn't sign a songwriter deal until I was 32. Wow. So, I mean, and even then it was a fluke, me even getting in the first place. I didn't even want to be really a pop songwriter, man. I just kind of didn't know what it was. And I was too immersed in just doing hip hop beats. And that's what I listened to. And that's what I loved, you know? And, I don't know, circling back around.
Walked in and you were still like listening to music.
Yeah.
Like on my way over, I'm listening to podcasts, you know, about nothing, and you're in here still sort of studying beats. Yeah. That's just like, is that the radio DJ in you?
It's the just trying to stay current thing, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, first of all, you gotta love it. You gotta love it, I think, right?
You have to go all in. If you have a plan B, I mean, it will not work in the city. You will get crushed.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, LA's rough. You just can't let it get to you, though. That's the thing, you know. And some people do well here and some people don't. Most of the stuff that I've done, man, when you're talking about like Burn, Counting Stars, all that, none of those records were written here. I can't, as a matter of fact, think of one record that I've done in the last 8 years that was written in LA.
In LA? Yeah. But you've done so many songs here.
Yeah. Well, I've worked on them here, but they weren't, but you know what I mean? They were conceived somewhere else.
So do you travel a lot then, or are you just like...
Well, look, I did. I did like 30 countries last year with the band, finishing the record.
Yeah.
And I mean, we went everywhere, you know what I mean, from like Istanbul
to... You should host a writing camp, and even just in Santa Barbara or something.
I know,
you just put together like 5 people and be like, let's get out of here.
Well, you know what, man? Because I just rapped, you know, I've had like a plan for the last year and a half, 2 years to kind of, you know, sign a writer or two of my own and kind of start doing that stuff and branching out. So this last couple months has been my...
Have you signed some writers then?
I'm signing one guy.
He's a producer.
Mm-hmm. Teach what you know, man, right?
That's what you were saying when we walked in. Because I feel like I want to find... I've always wanted to find a producer that I could just sort of bring around and have for a lot of things. And... but in reality, when it comes down to developing a writer, I'm going to give that producer really bad advice on how to be a real finisher. Because the minute I start talking to him, I'm going to be talking about how Top Line works.
Yeah, yeah.
And I won't be able to give like actual advice.
Exactly.
Do you give that guy? Like he's just starting, and you're like, "Welcome to Los Angeles. This place will swallow you whole." what advice do you give a new guy?
Well. Man, with a lot of the, it's really like, just the thing I kind of try to impart on them right away is the perspective of the song, in my opinion. You know, I mean, producers, obviously, it's like anything else. You know, they're so involved in the nuts and bolts and the mechanics of the sounds and everything. They get lost in it, man. Just like a keyboard player, you know what I mean, is like throwing in little licks everywhere because he's super good, or like a guitar player just can't help himself.
Yeah.
Same with a lot of producers, right? Like they're just, everything is so busy because you know, in an effort to really give it their all, they do, and they just go so hard. You just have to kind of get them to step back. You know, sometimes,
giving it your all doesn't mean you have to play everything. It
does just not means mean there's like, not a hole they're not willing to fill, you know what I mean, with some type of sound or some shit. It's just in getting them to kind of step back and hear the song and when to go crazy on the production, but make sure that the thing is in it, you know what I mean? It's even worth taking a shot at first. Second of all, getting it to a place where it may or may not work at radio, where the chorus is popping, where everybody's excited about it. And you know what I mean? And then
counting stars, when you start saying how simple the production is to you, you know, and you get into songs like Love Yourself, and you get into songs like 7 Years, and these songs that like that kill it at radio, some of them are way simple. You know, there's just nothing else. Like a hit song is not based on how loud that hi-hat is.
No.
You know?
No.
If anything, it'll only pull from how good the song is.
That's exactly it, man. And I got that, you know what I mean? I had that training kind of 101 from you know, the Ryan Tedder thing, because at his core, he, you know, he's a pop songwriter, man. So the song had to be there, you know, 100%. The chorus had to be there before we started dialing in, you know what I mean, diving into the other side of things.
It's a waste of time otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you'd be surprised, right? And I get it, man. I get it. I mean, I was, you know what I mean? I came from that producer side of it too. They're just looking at things differently, and I think there are better ways to...
Would you ever sign an established writer?
Yeah.
Somebody...
Sure. As long as I'm not going to butt heads with them. That's, you know what I mean? On every single thing, I mean.
Like, what advice would you give somebody who... Let's say that you find somebody who's... You know, there are a lot of writers.
There's
who
a producer that I like,
success.
Man. I'm not going to name his name, but I mean, I would sign him in a second. I just, you know, he's maybe a little too pop, and I can't afford him, you know, but I would. So what do you... I
don't know. How do you advise that guy? Like... You're only signing someone that you can, in a way, help. Like, how do you help an established guy?
Well, for me, honestly, I try to sign people, or I'm trying to sign people that can help me as much as I help them.
Okay.
You know, and
yeah,
so
you
I can take on more work
and
kind of divvy things out and stuff like that. So
every time I add something, I think that it's going to be, I can give them the work. Yeah. What it does, I mean, on some level, yeah, I can have my writers go and do sessions that I wouldn't normally be doing. And, you know, I almost always sign girls.
Interesting.
Like, I have signed two artists that are girls, two writers that are girls, you know. And it's like, because I can't do that, but I understand the songwriting part.
Sure.
And then at least that's something I can't do. But for the most part, it doesn't necessarily limit the amount of work I have.
Right.
You know?
I think the
dream is that you find someone who can do exactly what you do.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not possible because that's what you do.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you're always going to have a say and like, but I mean.
Well, the guy that I'm signing, I mean, you know, he can beat the pants off of me with production, man, for sure.
Oh, cool.
You know, well, in his own way.
Yeah, right.
You know, they're just.
It's weird for you to say that with like, you know, however many huge ass records. It's interesting to. But that's you who doesn't have a platinum record up on their wall.
Well.
I have my pile of records and whatever award things, and they're sitting next to a couch.
Okay.
And I have this image of going there's a couple writers I've been to where it's just floor to ceiling, you know, platinum plaque.
I kind of
want a room somewhere in my life where I have it. In a way for my grandkids to walk in and be like, oh, that's fucking cool. You know, like grandpa wrote for, I don't know, Flo Rida, like whoever that guy was.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's where, and I think legacy is stupid because I think in the end, like we'll all be dead and nobody's going to talk about what pop songs I had. Like people don't know who Franz Liszt is. They know who Mozart is. Like most the kids don't know who Ringo Starr is. They know who Paul McCartney is at best, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like they're not going to pay attention to like whatever I leave. But I kind of think having those plaques up in a room just to have some point would be cool.
Yeah. No,
but I try
I
not
totally
to put
agree.
I don't want them like up everywhere.
Yeah,
but I kind of want them up everywhere. Yeah. I don't begrudge someone for doing it.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
Yeah,
I think it's just for me, it's too intimidating, man. It's a personal thing.
I'm gonna give you a list of a few people.
Okay,
and I just kind of want to hear what your thoughts are.
Sure.
Adam Levine.
Love him, man. Yeah, I love that guy.
You've had like a bunch of records with them.
Yeah. Maybe done three or four songs with them, but two
Maps
singles.
Maps is probably the biggest, right?
Love Somebody as well.
Love Somebody, right? That was number one.
Back to back.
That's crazy.
singles, I think. Or,
yeah, because it was the last single of the previous of Overexposed, and then into.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that guy's rad, right? I mean, he not only is he an excellent player, he was an excellent musician. Like, I remember him just beating the shit out of the drums one day.
Yeah, people don't realize how good of a guitarist he is.
No, I mean, yeah, he's, it's unbelievable, man. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, rad guy.
Taylor Swift.
Badass.
Yeah.
Tough. Tough. She's a tough chick, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
You know, yeah, I mean, I did a couple things with her, and, talented too.
Yeah. A-list writer.
Imagine if, there are a couple like, people I've been in the room with where it's like, if they weren't artists, they would be the biggest top liners in the game probably. Adele was one of them too, bro. I mean, everything, that chick, everything that comes out of her mouth is, in my opinion,
you didn't work with Adele, though.
Dude, I did. I did like two different writing trips to London.
Did you get stuff on the record?
Ryan and I did like 11, 12 starts with her or something like that maybe. And, maybe fleshed out like five songs. Uh-huh. And then the only thing she ended up using was this song called Remedy that her and Ryan had done before I had anything to do with any of it. Unfortunately, I didn't get a song. Trust me, man. I mean, I'd be Grammy nominated for the second year if I had something on that album.
Yeah. Ellie Goulding.
Yeah, Ellie. You know, I love Ellie. Her voice is so sick.
I saw her live and I was floored.
You know, you hang with
her. I guess this is one of the problems that we were talking to Justin Traynor for this, and he was talking about the misogyny in the music business. And I think that there's like the feel of like pop stars, of these girls not being real musicians.
Right.
You know, like there's like this thing where people talk about, oh, it's all auto-tune and all that shit. And in reality, you see someone like Ellie Goulding live, and shame on me for not realizing that girl can fucking perform and sing and handle.
Grind, yeah. She's super badass, man. Well, the thing about like, you'll write with her, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, she's not really singing. We're just, you know, you're just kind of going through getting everything happening. And then she gets on the mic to cut a demo vocal.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing, man. And then once she starts singing, you're like, holy fuck, that's Ellie Goulding. You know, she has such a discernible, rad voice, man.
Sure. Ella Henderson.
Ella's awesome. Yeah. Such a sweet girl, man. And when I first worked with her, when I first met her, she had, you know, her biggest thing, right, to date was taking second or third or something like that on X Factor UK. Yeah. Simon signed her. And when I first met her, man, she
Ghost
was just
might be my
girl.
Favorite song that's on your resume.
Yeah.
I just think that's like one of those songs where it's like, fuck, I wish I wrote that one. I usually don't really wish I write, you know, kind of anything, but I sort of wish I wrote that one. That was a good one.
That song's rad, man. It came out pretty cool. And, I mean, everybody worked at that one, man. Everybody kind of jumped in and made that song happen for sure.
Ryan Tedder.
Ryan's rad, man. I mean, he's been my biggest mentor. Yeah. For sure. In all of this.
What's next for you?
You know, man, I'm just going to try to last, man, and write some great songs and do the thing, you know.
Do you ever worry?
Thank goodness I don't have any One Republic stuff to deal with for a while.
Yeah. Do you worry?
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, don't we all? This is such a brutal city. Is that what you're talking about?
Just I don't
in
know.
General?
I don't know, because, like, you know, I've always thought of you.
I look like I'm just like.
Yeah, because you're a really chill guy. I mean, I'm a pretty chill guy, too.
I sleep with a night guard because I grind my teeth so bad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I stress. I stressed on this last record hard, man. Politics. And
did you take a vacation?
No.
Do you ever take vacation?
No, man. And the thing that kind of sucked was I worked on the One Republic thing for so long that when I finally was, like, free from it, my management was just like, yes, we can start throwing him in everything.
And
I was like,
well,
wait a second here, you know?
I mean,
I haven't even been cut my advance from the One Republic record yet, and you've already completely filled my schedule, you know?
Yeah. Like, so, I don't take vacations very well, because I spend 2 days into it and I'm like, I wish I could go somewhere. Yeah, I can't disconnect.
Yeah.
But then you look at those, you know, Scandinavian writers, and they all take 2 months off.
They compartmentalize really
and
well.
None of us are like, oh, they left for 2 months. We won't write with them when they're back. why do we have this fear? Like, where does it come from that we don't just take, like, significant amount of time off regularly?
I don't know, man. It's like the American business model, isn't it? Aren't we the hardest? Like, we take less vacation than anybody on earth, I think, man.
Your dad's a jazz trumpet player. Like, it wasn't...
He was.
You know, is he, like... You know, was he working all the time?
Well, you know, my dad's story is kind of a whole different one, man. You know, he was a trumpet player kind of like first, you know, before he had kids and got married and stuff. Then he put it aside.
Oh, okay.
And then did a bunch of other stuff, so. So he did, you know what I mean? I don't remember him having that kind of grind. Our grind is different, though, isn't it? But don't you think some of it's because you love your job so much that...
Yeah, I love it. I'm
not
like
even a
so
job.
Happy
it's just,
doing
you're just
it. Yeah,
it's your hustle.
No doubt.
And so that's what it is, man.
Yeah.
We can't take a break from our hustle.
Yeah.
Because it's also where we find pleasure, right?
Sure. Sure.
I think that's the thing with us. We work hard because we want to work hard.
Yeah.
Is there fear? Yeah. I mean, we're all afraid that, like, the last dollar we just made is the last dollar we're going to make. We're all afraid that, you know what I mean, that we'll never get a cut again.
We're entrepreneurs. I mean, like, nobody – there is no boss. There's no severance package.
No. And that's why this city's so weird, right? Because everybody in this town is in the same boat we are. So they're A, trying to manage the thing they're in at the moment while simultaneously trying to line up the next meal. You know what
but
I mean?
But that's not different in any other business, right?
I mean, yeah, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. I've lived here since
that's
I was 18.
That's all we know. That's all we know.
I've lived
right?
here since I was 18. I genuinely don't know if, like, you know, if
but
I'm
dude,
a banker.
Make no mistake, we're nuts, man. I mean, is your girl in the industry?
No.
Well, see, doesn't she think you're batshit crazy, man?
Yeah, I guess that's probably why she liked me in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, to civilians, I call them civilians.
Yeah, right? I call them muggles. Isn't that what they're called in like in
muggles?
Yeah, isn't that with Harry Potter? It's like the humans.
Oh, yeah.
Like they call it like wizards and muggles.
Yeah,
and it's like the you know there's like wizards and then they're the people who don't really understand the how it's really done. You know,
dude, my old girlfriend, the one that from Denver and all that stuff. One, I'd been working on so much shit, and one day she just looked at me and she goes, "God, I wish I could." You know what I mean? Make a living like you, just messing around with keyboards all day. That's what she said.
Well, it is a little bit of a video game. There's no doubt. Like, I don't know if there's a difference between sitting in a computer and playing on Logic or sitting in front of a PlayStation and playing a video game. And I think that's why I can't put it down, is that, you know, a lot of people are like, I am so backlogged on work, but I'm sitting here having conversations with you, because that's inspiring. And even when it comes down to, like, these tracks, I was like, oh, I'll work on it during break. Because during break, it's like, what am I going to do? Not write? I actually really enjoy it.
I know.
It makes me happy. Taking a break just makes me feel like I'm not working.
Yeah, I know.
Which is totally...
It's weird. It's
weird.
Yeah, the mentality's weird, but it's also... It's just... It's
We're also
so
in the
fun,
thick of it.
Man.
We're in the thick of it. Like, you know, I see your Instagram. Like, you're obviously busy... working on things.
Right,
so when
right.
you're working on things, it's really, you know.
In the way this industry works, it's like, you know, with the Ella Henderson stuff that I've been doing recently, I mean, you know, I'm dealing with the record labels overseas that are texting me at 4 a.m.
Exactly.
However that works, you know. So that's the other part of it. It's just a 24-hour-a-day thing.
Yeah.
It never sleeps. It never sleeps, bro. It's not that we don't sleep. It's that it doesn't sleep and we're forced to stay awake with it.
I remember saying when we were first writing and I was doing like some of these late night sessions still in my life and saying...
Which you're not doing anymore, right?
Oh, no.
I don't work
at nights and I don't work weekends. And I was up at 6 o'clock this morning and I was working on some lyric stuff because I was in bed and that's when I start working. It's quiet. It's actually the sun's not even up yet. And it's like I don't need to be... I don't like the concept of like... Oh, I'm grinding all the time. I don't think that that's realistic, and I don't think I'm creative.
No.
I kind of say that I'm not creative after 5:30.
Yeah.
Like that last half hour and a half is me really struggling to get a song finished.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I was an engineer for years just like, you know, in these sessions where people would just hang 24 hours a day. They were
and
just
not
dicking off. Yeah. And you're like, you're hanging here because it's a studio and like girls are coming in and like, whoa, wait a second. Work is literally the last thing like, you guys are trying to do here.
I think my tombstone's going to say something like, working on the second verse should be done in a second. You know, yeah, like, yeah,
exactly,
because like that's my most common tweet or text to my wife is like, you know, it's like at that point at night, it's like it shouldn't take too long. And I'm spending 2 hours just trying to get this fucking second verse that no one cares. And I'm going to end up having to tweak when you call me later and say, like, can you come back and tweak it anyway? So it's like, yeah. I'd rather copy and paste the fucking first verse, because if you don't like the song because I didn't change the lyrics in the second verse, fuck you.
Right.
You know, it's like...
It's a lifelong hustle, isn't it?
It just is.
I read this thing on and it was Woody Allen, right? And he said that every time, like, one of his films goes into, you know, the minute his script goes into filming, he starts writing a new script. He's always got something new, you know, that he's working on, and I think that's a big, that's simple. You know what I mean?
In
a super simple way, that's the model for what we do as well.
Well, thank you for doing this, and you know, I have to by closing it. There aren't a lot of people that I root for more unconditionally than you. I've known you for so long, and to watch you succeed like you have has been inspiring, and has made me be like, fuck, man, if when you start working with certain people and they start breaking before you do, and eventually we all did fine, but you start seeing that you're like, man, I need to work harder. Or I need to figure out why are these working? And it's like, it's always been fun to watch you do really good songs that happen to also do well commercially. And, you know, to see the success has been really exciting. So congratulations, and welcome back to Los Angeles.
Thank you, sir. And likewise, you've had a hell of a year.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer is produced by Joe London, edited by Miles Bergsma, and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to Jeff Sparger, David Silberstein from Mega House Music, and Michael White. Here's a sneak peek of next week's And the Writer Is.
Midnight Memories was originally I Love KFC. Like, until the very end, we didn't have the chorus lyric. We like wrote all these lyrics.
No way.
I love KFC. Maybe you and me stumbling in the street, singing. I love KFC.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think that would have changed? That would have made the song bigger.
Way bigger.
Yeah. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.